Welcome to the Cinephile History Fit Podcast, brought to you by the Ruminations Radio Network and sponsored by Film Obsessive. This is the Tirade Film Movie Debate, hosted by two film critics, cool dads, and struggling teachers. Once again, I'm Don Shanahan.
Son of a bit. Oh, sorry, my hand quotation marks was stuck in my Dune popcorn bucket.
Oh,
I'm William Johnson.
Hand. Got it. Hand. And yeah. A movie that has nothing to do with the Oscars, but well, it could have been like this would be a juggernaut number three entering the fold if this came out in November. It'd be interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, we're damn glad to have you folks. This is all for tangent's sake. We're share passions and high fives, wash away any place for hate. No matter what, we encourage you all to love what you love. But for now, the gloves are off and the hiss of it is on. Welcome back to our second week of two of Oscar predictions and lamentations. That giggle you heard earlier to a Dune popcorn chuck popcorn cup joke was from Katie Glidewell, the blonde in front.
Hey, 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 I got my Dune. I actually have two of them.
Two of them, don't you?
You know.
But Katie, what do you stick in it?
That's for me and both of my buckets to know and for you to never find out.
Oh, never wanted to be a bucket more in my life.
Right? Can I be a tendril on a sandworm right now? Oh my
gosh. It actually feels pretty good. I'm not going to lie.
I
put my hand in it and I was like,
quote,
feels kind of good.
Yeah. This is brought to you by KY Jelly, ladies and gentlemen. In the meantime,
this one.
No. Hey, we're all lubed up for the Oscars. Lover and hater aspect of our show goes. the lover and hater aspect of our show goes away for this Oscar preview show. We're here to do what it coulda, shouldas, and snubs, and will win and should win. Last week we did everything under the title. This week we left you with screenplay, director, the four acting nominations and categories, and best picture, where we can stretch our legs for an hour on this stuff here. So we'll do a couple of screenplays and director, take a break, and then do the big stuff at the top here. So initial thoughts, like we did last episode, folks, how does this year land? We talked a little bit last week about like the year in general. How does this year look from the big time standpoint, like history making acting stuff here? Where are we at with this year?
Oh, acting wise?
Acting wise.
I mean, there's some, I would say despite the Oscars in general not being that exciting this year in terms of like variety, there are some really good names of people that are rising in the ranks, have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Maybe are quote unquote due. You know, there's definitely some stuff, good mixture of old and young stars and up and comers. So not bad.
Katie, what do you think?
I personally feel like for roles for women, and roles that have stood out last year was one of the better years where you had so many like standout and amazing performances. And I wish that would be every year. I feel like sometimes there's not enough that are talked about. And this year I felt like there were so many that it was so difficult to choose to narrow it down to five, which I would like that every single year. Like, I feel like there are a number of women who honestly should have gotten nominated for the Oscar and other awards that got snubbed and just weren't even in consideration. But, you know, I feel like their names were out there in some of the different awards, maybe smaller awards that got picked up. And that to me is a plus, because then I get to see them, you know, I hopefully get to see them in more roles in the future.
But how seriously can you take it that Greta Lee wasn't nominated? I mean, I don't know how seriously I can take this, any of these acting categories without Greta Lee or TU being nominated. Well, so,
I mean, I agree. And the same with Tiana Taylor for 1001. I mean,
everybody in the Iron Claw.
To me, she was like one of the standout performers of the year, and I feel like she really should have been nominated in all these different awards.
I know you and I Katie are Anjanae Taylor Ellis people from Origin, like that lady should be here. There's lots. I'll go on, this might be a weird little tangent to take in here, but I know over the years since the Me Too and whatnot, people have said, oh, do the Oscars need to just kind of do away with gender categories and put everyone in the same pool. And I'm glad they don't, because I think there's too much boys club still around where if you made a category where even if you put 6 to 8 nominations, I think you'd see too much dominance from one thing or another and not like, no, we've got 10 really good female nominees between lead and supporting that I don't think you would see if you combine categories together the way the Gotham Awards have started to do so and things like that. So I'm glad the category stuff is here. At the same time, there's places where we said it last show, we'll say it this show, where there's some little engines that could, and there's some indie things that I wish had more attention that don't get attention because of the backloaded award season here where, yeah, biggest contenders, biggest spenders tend to dominate these spots. And it's a unique problem to have because there's so, we're talking about having there be so many where it's a unique problem to have, but at the same time, because it's a unique problem to have and there are so many, you want to do it right and get it right, or at least spread the right wealth. And that's always challenging. And I think it's tricky. Before we get to the categories, I'll play statistician man here where, the honorary Academy Awards coming out this year are going to 3 people. We've got Angela Bassett. Yay. We've got Mel Brooks, and we've got Kara Littleton. And then the Jean Hersholtz Humanitarian Award goes to Michelle Satter. So it's nice to see that they've got things going. And always have great, they always have very nice picks there. And I'm glad with somebody like Angela Bassett, they're not waiting too late. Mel Brooks is 97,000 years old where they maybe waited a little too long here. Cause it'd be nice to have Carl and his friend, you know, Carl Reiner, and nice to have his buddies on stage with him to pat his back in that award, but everybody's gone but Mel. And then the other thing to keep in mind here, and this is, we can maybe talk about this when we get to the best picture here, but this was the first year that the quote unquote diversity rules for the best picture category became mandatory. Hmm. So you two know about this a little bit or no?
Yes, I do recall that, that they announced that in 2019 or 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2020. So the 4 general standards of which a film must satisfy 2 to be a considered for Best Picture are on-screen representation of themes and narratives, creative leadership and project team, industry access and opportunities, and audience development are the 4 standards that a Best Picture nominee must hit 2 of. So now when we'll think about that when we get to where our 10 nominees of Best Picture. To start things off, I'll do the screenplay stuff here. So we've got best adapted screenplay. You've got American Fiction by Cord Jefferson for the novel Erasure by Percival Everett. You've got Barbie based on character, some category fun stuff here. Barbie all season's been an original screenplay sent to the Oscars for adapted screenplay from characters based on Ruth Handler's creations by Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach. You've got Oppenheimer based on the biography American Prometheus, the long Guy Bird and Martin Sherwin film. You've got Poor Things based on the novel by Alistair Gray by Tony McNamara, the theatrical specialist. And you have The Zone of Interest, adapted by Jonathan Glazer, the director himself, from the novel by Martin Amis. I look at the odds, but I'll let you guys talk about it while we're getting started here.
I'll follow the BAFTA winner. I think American Fiction will win, even though I don't think it maximized its potential as a screenplay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In regards to Barbie, like, I know it's weird because, like, Top Gun Maverick wasn't adapted because of characters that previously existed. I know Glass Onion was adapted because it was a sequel.
Yeah.
This is weird stuff, but Barbie should be an original, not a...
I agree.
It's weird. But I'm going to go American Fiction.
Okay. Katie, what do you think here?
I actually would love American Fiction to win Best Adapted Screenplay. It was in my top 10 for one of my favorite movies. I love that screenplay. I love everything that it represents. It almost kind of reminds me of Hollywood Shuffle of the 21st century. I think it may go to Oppenheimer.
Yeah. If I go to the betting odds here, that BAFTA win helped American Fiction. It's the highest odds favorite, which is great to see. Like, if that's the spot to award not just diversity, but independent cinema and good stuff. That you've got a good winner there with American Fiction. Mm-hmm. This is probably a situation where we're going to go to this category next with Barbie and original screenplay. This kind of shafted Barbie. I think Barbie has a hell of a better shot winning next door where we get to the category after this, but where who American Fiction has to worry about is indeed the sweep that is Oppenheimer, because you have this, you know, massive biography that was honed down to be the, you know, the triptych of settings that Nolan does. That's the next odds on, you know, contender here, and then everything else is distant. Barbie's got some odds to it, Poor Things pretty far, and Zone Adventure's dead last in Vegas betting, where I have to pick a winner here. Because Christopher Nolan didn't write the screenplay, I bet they don't give him credit for it. His name's on it. So yeah, let's give this to American Fiction. Let's say BAFTA takes it here. I think American Fiction can
What did you say about Nolan?
The fact that Christopher Nolan, he did write the screenplay for this. Never mind. Oh, his name's on it. Well, stop the presses, shit. Because they love, it's him. We need to give it to him. Like, shower him for all the Oscars he missed. Shit. I think American Fiction gets snubbed. I'm going to go Oppenheimer here. I'm going to predict the snub.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I know. I don't want it to win, but you're asking me who I'm putting money on? I'm going up and over. Over in Best Original Screenplay, you have Anatomy of a Fall by Justin Triet and Arthur Harara. You have The Holdovers by David Hemmingson. You have Maestro by Bradley Cooper and Josh Singer. You have May December, screenplay by Sammy Birch, story by Sammy Birch and Alex Mannikin. And this is maybe the spot. Past Lives and Celine Song. So maybe Barbie's exit is Celine Song's gain. I hope this can win in this category. My could win and should win, or at least my should win should be Past Lives. I'll look at the odds here and let you guys discuss from there.
Yeah, Past Lives should win. I think it's going to go to either Holdovers or Anatomy of a Fall. And actually, I'm thinking more Anatomy of a Fall, because Holdovers was not co-written by Alexander Payne, which surprises me.
When you lose the name there.
I'm going to go Anatomy of a Fall. It's going to win. It shouldn't win, but it's going to.
Yeah. Katie, who do you have here to place the bets on?
I'm actually in complete agreement with, it should go to Past Lives. I love this movie. It's just universally, anyone can relate to it, and it's just an amazing film. But I feel like since Anatomy of a Fall has been nominated for so many other awards, and it's not going to get any of those, they're going to award Anatomy of a Fall with Best Screenplay.
Yeah, this is interesting, because Vegas odds have it at Anatomy of a Fall. Holdovers is second, and Past Lives is third. Maestro made us American contenders. This is hard, because if it is this, the three things that are betting favorites here are all probably the places where this is the one place of the night to get one of these little guys an award, because if Cillian Murphy is starting to exceed Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers isn't winning anywhere else. Anatomy of Fall nominated in all those categories, like Will said, and it's a very good, very good original screenplay. Easily one of the best legal movies you've seen in the years, where it's good. It's darn good. And then, but that's like this, like you said, this is the one place it can win. And then you have the indie darling, which we all love, which is Past Lives. And this is the only place it can win. So, Anatomy of the Fall is the betting favorite. The Holdovers
has a lock in one category, though.
Which one?
It does.
Best supporting actress.
Oh, well, then that's the one. Then I take Holdovers out of the game here. You know, because like not being Alexander Payne, that kind of gets shuffled to the side. You're right. Randolph's the lock of the night. So then yeah, it's Anatomy of Fall or Past Lives. So, I'll play upset guy twice. I think Celine sneaks.
So we just talked about like the weirdness of the adapted screenplay. So here's my thing.
Yeah.
May December is very specifically, yes. I mean, almost note for note, an adaptation of a news story. I know that's not a adaptation of a book, but it's virtually, I mean, down to like the ethnicity of the people involved. It's basically an adaptation of a real life news story. Why is that not adapted to screenplay?
Because if you look at the story of the movie, it's everything that isn't the news story. It's this like they've never had an actress visit the real life subject to go.
That's true. That's a good point.
So that whole tangent of what they're doing here is original versus the roots of it being set into whatever history they're emulating.
That's true. It's it is weird because I agree with you on that aspect, like an actress trying to play it, but at the same time, the characterization, like the characters that they're interacting with are literally like based on reality. Yeah. But I don't know, whatever.
Kind of crazy where in a different year, if this was, if this was 1998 or something like that, this is probably Maestro's to win, where the grand big biopic from a very big star looms over the weird shit of everything else, where a foreign film wouldn't get nominated in this category 20 years ago. So An Enemy of Fall wouldn't even get a chance. Past Lives, being half foreign, so to speak, wouldn't get a chance. Where 25 years ago, this is Maestro's to win, but or it would be Holdovers, because it'd be the, James L. Brooksy, As Good As It Gets-y kind of, kitschy 70s wannabe thing. So, no, this is be a fun category tonight. I'll be the challenging guy. I know you got two Anatomy of the Fall votes here. I'll be the guy that says Celine steals it. It'd be crazy. But
I wanted to go with Celine more than anything.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
I want to be wrong in this. Honestly, I do.
Yeah. Indeed. All right. I'll do best director, and then we'll take it to a read break here.
Gotcha.
All right. So best director, an interesting lot. It should be a quick conversation. An interesting lot of nominees compared to all the fluster that kind of went with it. You've got two foreign film nominees. You have Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest. You have Justin Triet of Anatomy of Fall. You've got an international nominee of ethnicity, at least, with Yorgos Lanthimos of Poor Things. Then you've got Marty and Chris. You've got Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon. You have Christopher Nolan. Who wins? Who should win? Who's not here? Talk about it.
Celine Song's not here. Should
Thank
be.
You. Agreed.
Ava Rockwell's not here. Should be. Ava DuVernay's not here. Should be.
Thank you.
Right there. Alexander Payne's not here. Should be.
Agreed. First guy I cut is Marty. I'm saying right out loud.
Yeah. Well, here's the template.
It's a rote job from him. It's just long.
The template here is, if they weren't going to give it to a 75-year-old Steven Spielberg last year for his passion project, which might be one of his last movies he ever makes, they're not going to give it to Marty for this middling film.
I agree. So, yeah.
It's going to go to Christopher Nolan. It's Oppenheimer's going to win Best Picture. He's going to win Best Director. He might win Screenplay based on your analysis.
Yeah.
This is Nolan's to lose. I can't think of them. Like, was there ever one where the odds on favorite suddenly didn't win? I can't.
In this category, we've had some odds on favorites not get nominated, but not like straight up lose. That's a good question.
Maybe what's his, it kind of worked in reverse. Maybe it was Saving Private Ryan. Steven Spielberg won director, and it was like, okay, foregone conclusion, it's going to win Best Picture, then Shakespeare in Love won.
But, the other way around. Didn't Steven Soderbergh win this for Traffic, but then something else won Best Picture years ago? Like, that split's been happening more often, where the picture director split every now and then diverges.
Yeah, so 2000 was Gladiator. So, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Where maybe Ridley Scott kind of maybe should have had that and not Soderbergh.
Oh, duh.
I know. Same. I agree.
I like Soderbergh, but and Ridley Scott can certainly make a bad movie too, but he can make some damn good ones when he really tries. Mm-hmm. So.
From a Vegas standpoint, this is the lock of the night. We've not had odds this far in any direction. I know I gave you a lock of the night earlier. This one's double the previous lock before. This is Nolan and no one else. It's crazy.
Yep.
All right. Time. Okay. Well, ladies and gents, let me get to this spot here. Let's take a quick break from a short announcer from our non-corporate partners and friends.
What's up, gang? This is Hoptimus. You've been listening to one of the great new podcasts from Ruminations Radio Network. If you want some more tasty sound vibes, come check out my new podcast, The Retro Futurist Culture, where we talk about alternate timelines, cyberpunk, anime, and other crazy worlds. If that does not strike your fancy, we have plenty of other great shows at ruminationsradionetwork.com.
All right, welcome back. Okay, the acting nominations. For Best Supporting Actress, we have Emily Blunt from Oppenheimer. We have Danielle Brooks from The Color Purple. We have America Ferrera from Barbie. We have Jodie Foster from Nyan and Devin Joy Randolph from The Holdovers. Discuss.
Holdovers or Devin Joy Randolph is the lock, I would assume. However, if there is any opportunity for a, Olivia Colman. What's her name? I said it earlier in the last episode when Olivia Colman upset Glenn Close. If that exists at all, it'd be Emily Blunt, probably because of somebody saying like, "Trust me, this is not Emily Blunt's best performance ever. This is more like a makeup nomination because she's like one of those ones that was kind of like she was kind of like Gary Oldman, where you were like, Emily Blunt's never been nominated for an Oscar before." And she could maybe steal it, but I think it's Devin Joy Randolph lock.
I mean, this is her. It's Devin Joy Randolph's Oscar to lose, honestly, at this point. She won the BAFTA. I don't know if she hasn't won it in any awards right now. But yeah.
So did Glenn Close, though. Glenn Close won everything that year. And then Olivia Colman.
Not everything. But she did win. Yeah, not everything. She did win a lot of them. But I mean, you know, this was a good year. Like Sandra Huller could have been nominated for Zone of Interest. Viola Davis could have been nominated for Air or.
Wait, you mean Sandra Huller for Zone of Interest or for Anatomy of Fall?
Zone of Interest.
No, Zone of Interest for Best Supporting Actress.
Sorry, I got confused. Well, yeah, we're in Supporting Actress. Sorry, my bad. All right.
Yeah, she would have been. He would have been great in this, I think. And also, yeah, Viola Davis in Air. And I loved her in this, the Songbirds and Snakes, that Hunger Games movie. She was great in that. She played a character that I've never seen her play, just so eminently evil. And yeah, but I mean, honestly, I think it's going to go to Devin Joy Randolph. If it's not, I could see America Ferrera. Getting this. I mean, she's been getting a lot of rewards for different things. I do think it is noteworthy that Jodie Foster, between Jodie Foster and Colman Domingo, they're both playing characters, openly gay actors and actresses that are playing openly gay characters, which is a historic moment in Oscar history. I mean, Oscars are going on for 90 something years, and it's the first time that this has happened. So
that's amazing.
There's something, you know, that could something be a possibility, but no, I think it's definitely going to go to Devin Joy Randolph. We could talk about this all, but I mean, that right there, I think, is the biggest lock of the night.
It's the biggest lock in the major categories. That's not the acting categories. That's the one for sure. Betting odds show that as well. It's Devin and it's nobody else. There's a three-way tie betting odds between Brooks, Blunt, and Ferrera, where Foster is a distant fifth. But I mean, I can talk about Maura Tierney and people in the Iron Claw, but no, I mean, when you see Devin Joy Randolph in that movie be kind of the glue person that kind of keeps that character thing going and plays the middleman between the young and the old, and that it's a good part in a good movie and it plays well, and she's doing what we have. This is a dominant run where like Katie said, she's won everything. This is J.K. Simmons level where to kind of flip the race roles, like when you see J.K. Simmons win the NAACP award, you know it's a damn good performance, despite the color of their skin. So, Devin is runway in hiding with this for sure.
I think what's her name in the best actress category, Lily Gladstone. I think they were fine performances, but not a great, not a maximalization.
sure,
of what they could have done. And that might be just because I don't love either movie, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought she was great, but
yeah.
Not like award worthy great, but I'm obviously in the minority on that.
Yeah. So. I mean, from the five people they have there, I think Best Supporting Actress is the weakest of the four acting fields this year, where you go to the two leads and you go to supporting actors and you've got knocked down, drag out, can't lose the movie without them performances versus kind of Devine and everyone else in this one. You go to the other ones and you're like, you can't take them away from their movies. And despite how much I talk about Robert Downey Jr., you can't take them away from their movies and have the same movie versus you can kind of, somebody else can do. I mean, I love America for its monologue, but somebody else can do it in Barbie. Jodie Foster is a fine actress in representing what she represents, but she's a coach blowing a whistle and clapping hands. You know, Emily Blunt, anyone can play the wife. Daniel Brooks has a degree of difficulty there, where Daniel Brooks is on there for good reason, but Blunt could be played by anybody. Yeah. Or I would take Blunt, I'd put Penelope Cruz for Ferrari in there. If you're going to put the wife in there, put the most challenging wife of the year, not Emily Blunt. So.
I don't know. Emily Blunt, I mean, I said this before in the one before this. The fact, the glares that she gives people in that movie,
that's good.
That right there was enough for me to like say she's going to be nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Like she did more performances. She did like a better performance without saying a word than a number of people did last year. And I don't think, I mean, she was a horrible wife. She was a horrible mother. And, you know, she stood her ground in everything that was going on, with Oppenheimer at the end. And yeah, I feel like she was more than just a wife character, but, yeah, I mean, Blunt to me, it's like, if it wasn't, Divine Joy, I do think Danielle Brooks though is absolutely amazing. And after seeing Color Purple, I immediately knew that she was going to get nominated. I said to myself, it's like, this was any other year, this would have been her little gold man.
Like that's the Ariana DeBose part from West Side Story. Like the stick that stirs the drink, the supporting character that lifts the whole movie from a performance standpoint. Like that's the DeBose spot, you know?
I like the Ariana DeBose spot.
Yeah.
I think you like certain spots. Yeah, that's true. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Before we devolve into that, the best supporting actor category loaded. And it could have been double loaded if you go five deep here with some snubs. You've got Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction. You've got Robert De Niro in Killers of Flower Moon. You've got Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer. You've got Ryan Gosling in Barbie. And you've got Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. That's a big category there. I'll go first in this one. My should win is Ryan Gosling. I think comedy is the hardest thing to do and pull off well. That man makes an ass of himself, yet still ropes it in for 2 hours. Will and I had a recent editorial episode where we talk about naturalistic acting. How much can you make things look easy? How much can you make a difficult thing look easy? And I can't put anyone else in that role and have it still not just physically be Ken, but just like convincingly be a boob. I think that's harder to do than Sterling K. Brown getting some good lines and some spots. I think it's way harder to do than Robert De Niro chewing a few things and slapping a paddle on Leo's ass for 2 seconds. Robert Downey Jr., I'll talk about that in a second. Mark Ruffalo, it's a nice little part for Mark Ruffalo, but he has no business being here either. I think Ryan Gosling had had to show more range and more juice than anybody else. It's probably category four where he should be in best actor, but I'm the should win guy for Ryan, even though I know somebody else is going to win.
Yeah, I am rooting for Robert Downey Jr. for many reasons, but only because, and I'll be satisfied if Ruffalo won too. Mainly because I'm getting really tired of, we talked about some other shows, I'm getting really tired of people saying that he hasn't been acting for the last 15 years, and now he's welcome back, buddy. No
one's saying that.
Yeah, come on.
That's a lot of people have been saying that, and it's driving me up the wall because it just film Twitter, which you know is a cesspool, but like people just be like, oh, now that he's in real movies again. Here's the thing.
Stop it. Yeah.
I think now I've always fought against the Oscars going to like who deserves it for the career versus the performance.
got some that going on here.
This may be one of the exceptions where I'll allow it. And that's why I think Robert Downey Jr. should win. Not only because I think he's phenomenal in the movie, even though Ryan Gosling and Mark Ruffalo are amazing for me as well. But I kind of want to win it for the nerds. I want us to be like, hey, this was our leader, man. This was our leader for 15 years. You guys disrespected him. He's even come out and said himself, some of the best acting I've done in my career was in Marvel, and no one will ever appreciate it. And it's like, all right, let's get him the Oscar to appreciate it. So I'm going for it for reasons that are outside of the performance. It just so happens that the performance is also exceptional. So I'm going RDJ.
Yeah. Katie handicapped this feel.
I mean, look, I love the fact that two of the Avengers are nominated for Oscars, and I don't feel like enough people are talking about that. I think it should go to Ryan Gosling, but I think it will go to Robert Downey Jr. And the fact is, whether I think he does deserve it. I think both of them deserve it. And I said in July, after watching both of those movies back to back, the hardest, the biggest battle is going to be between Ryan Gosling and Robert Downey Jr. And I even said that on camera, like as soon as I got done with Oppenheimer. These are two of the best performances. I knew, like, leaving that Ryan Gosling was going to be best supporting actor, because I knew if Barbie was going to do anything, they wouldn't have Ken be lead actor. It's part of the whole zeitgeist of the film. And I even saw an interview afterwards that Ryan Gosling said that. But yeah, Robert Downey Jr. did an amazing job in Oppenheimer. The villain, the just antagonist that you hate, I mean, and that left. And one of the reasons why I think Oppenheimer is going to get best screenplay is because of things that are directed towards his character that other people say, and things that he says in the film. And I feel like that right there is worthy of the Oscar, but his performance is just, it really is fantastic.
Well, you know what? It's only happened twice in terms of actors. Let's just get a tie.
I love that. Oh my God. That would be amazing. And so like, seriously, it's justified. They both did such incredible performances, and it's just two completely different ends of the spectrum. Like you said, one's comedy and one's like drama.
That's what will prevent Gosling from winning is the fact that it is comedy.
Yep.
It's super rare for a comedian to even get nominated or a comedic performance. The chances of it winning, I would assume, what's the odds on it, Don?
The odds are it's Oppenheimer, Running Away and Hiding with Robert Downey Jr. Gosling, it goes Gosling, then it goes De Niro, then Ruffalo, then Sterling K.
Really? Honestly, I wish Willem Dafoe had been nominated instead of De Niro. I wish Noah Galvin in Theater Camp would have been nominated instead of De Niro. I thought he did a better job. And I think that Chris Messina in Air did a better job than De Niro.
How about any of the Iron Claw people?
I'm a Holt McCallany guy. You know, that's...
Yeah.
Any of those folks should be there. But here we are with resume padding for De Niro. So I get it.
That is true. The actor that played, Hoyt McKinnon or something like that, that played the dad in Iron Claw, he was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Really good.
Yeah.
No, there's just so many. For the restraint that they showed not nominating DiCaprio in lead actor, I wish they'd done that with Robert De Niro because, don't get me wrong, I love De Niro. I just don't think anything different. No. It just blows my mind when people are on Twitter saying like, it's one of the best performances of his career. I'm like, because he's been doing Meet the Fockers and Showtime the last 25 years. Uh-huh. That's why it's his best performance. Doesn't mean it's his best performance. It just means he's actually made, you know, something that's not, you know, War with Grandpa.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting here because you can almost say there are bigger quote unquote movie stars in the supporting actor field than there are in the lead. Cause you have no doubters with De Niro, Downey, Gosling, and Ruffalo, thanks to Avengers, where those are four A-listers. And then Sterling K. Brown, who's an Emmy winner and A-lister on television. And then you go to Best Actor. And then you go to Best
Actor. Multiple nominations, too.
Oh, yeah.
That's Ruffalo's fourth, I think. And
yeah,
third or something like that. So,
and this is my chance to pivot to Best Actor, where you've got one movie star and then four ham and eggers, as Will would put it. So you've got Bradley Cooper and Maestro earning his, no matter what order you put it in, 12th nomination.
Sure.
And then here you go, the Character Actor Hall of Fame in a certain way. You've got Colman Domingo, who's been doing amazing work in everything he touches. Here he is, plum lead role in Rustin, and a darn good one. You've got Paul Giamatti, the beloved Paul Giamatti, who's been everyone's favorite curmudgeon for a long time, and his best curmudgeon part in years of The Holdovers. Cillian Murphy, who's always deserved a lead acting spot in a feature, is getting that in television, makes the jump back to movies. His buddy Nolan puts him on the biggest pedestal he can with Oppenheimer. And then Jeffrey Wright, who's also amazing in everything you put him in, gets the best lead part in a generation. And then here he is, where four ham and eggers and a movie star versus that supporting field where you have Murder's Row. And in this field, you're right, no DiCaprio. At the same time, no Zac Efron. You can go deep here in lots of places, but you're right. The restraint not to have DiCaprio surprises.
Seriously, has he been nominated for anything, though? Like, other than a DiCaprio? Golden Globe? Because I did not think there was anything special about his performance at all.
No, me neither. I'm happy that he's been, like, I don't want to say he went full retard, but he went full Billy Bob Thornton, and that's maybe gotten him out of this. So
I cannot believe you just quoted what's the call in on here regarding Tropic Thunder.
No, but that's kind of Leo kind of went full Hayseed, and you never go full Hayseed, man, you know.
Are we talking about Best Actor now?
Let's go Best Actor, because it's Downey Jr. running away and hiding and supporting, so let's go Best Actor.
I mean, it's Cillian Murphy's like winning all the stuff, right,
at the moment. Yeah,
yes. Mm-hmm.
There's some spots where it's Paul, but yeah.
I'd love Giamatti to win it just because I think he deserves it for Sideways. That's when he wasn't even nominated, and they tried to make up for it the next year by nominating him for Cinderella Man. But it's going to be Cillian Murphy. I mean, he is the main character in the film that's going to win all the huge awards.
You
can't really make the film without him. So. There's no Oppenheimer without him. So,
Katie, what do you think?
This is, I think, the only category in all of the Oscars that I think they did a damn fine job with all the nominees. How happy I was that Colman Domingo got nominated for Rustin, because after watching that, I was like, this is a career making. I mean, this is just a performance that I could not see anyone else doing. And he did such an amazing job. Jeffrey Wright was absolutely incredible. Bradley Cooper, honestly, was the one that I was kind of iffy about, just because, I don't know, it's the whole like 1930s talk that really threw me off. And I don't know. There's just something about just didn't like. But I mean, it is a beautiful film. And him, you know, with the orchestra, that's just where everything lies. Yeah. This is Cillian Murphy. I think the fact that everyone has been talking about that he only ate like one pistachio a day to like get so frail and thin, completely engulfed himself in this character. I think it's Cillian Murphy.
I'll be the crazy one that takes the zag. I think we've seen enough Academy Awards favor the old guy instead of the young guy, even when the young guy should win, even as recently as Hopkins over Bozeman, which should have been a slam dunk in terms of for a lot of things. I think Paul Giamatti squeaks it.
Awesome. I'd love that.
I would too. He's the second betting favorite here. Cillian is not a big odds winner here versus Giamatti. Then no one else. Coleman and Jeffrey are a long way away. It's a bummer because when I see Jeffrey Wright, I see Peebles Hernandez back in Shaft, and then I watch him pretend to play the thug character in American Fiction. And like, this is the guy who plays Peoples Hernandez. He can totally do this. Then like to watch him pretend, you know, that's my favorite part of the movie, when he has to pretend to be a thug, when I know damn well that actor can nail it if he wanted to. But it was the fact that he's faking it. It's fun. Don't get me wrong. I'm a Bradley Cooper stan, where that's a big, big, big performance, and I'm impressed by it. But I think the Oscars go old man here. I think Giamatti takes that Oscar, goes to In-N-Out, and gets another burger.
I mean, that would be great. I can't wait for him to sign my singles VHS for that small role that he had in it. But that's my first glimpse of Giamatti.
How about that? All right, to Best Actress. We have Annette Bening in Naiad. We have Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon. We have Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall. We have Carey Mulligan in Maestro and Emma Stone in Poor Things. Talk about the field, folks.
I think it's Emma Stone for Poor Things. I think Lily Gladstone did an amazing job. I think, oh God, Annette Bening. Talk about someone who's not won an Oscar. She is absolutely incredible. It's like she's always like second place in the times that she has been up for it before. But this time, I think she's coming in maybe like third. But this is such an amazing performance. Yeah. And I just wish it was another year.
Yeah. For Annette Bening to do that role at 65, you know, put herself in that water and do all the things she did, and then still act as the driven character that she is really, really impressive. We saw that movie the same night, and she had us going. I think this is I've been the asshole here most of the time, where I'm like, Killers of Flower Moon is going to get fucking shut out. Just you watch, you know, 0-10, second 0-10 performance from a Scorsese movie in a row. I think it shouldn't be a political thing, and it shouldn't be taken as a representation thing. But I do think you can do the whole, it's an honor just be nominated. And I think if Emma Stone hadn't won an Oscar in her career already, yes, this is a slam dunk. The best female performance I've seen this year is Emma Stone in Poor Things. Hands down, all of that. But I don't think the Oscars can resist making the statement that they think they want to make by giving it to Lily Gladstone and not having a Scorsese shutout. I think she squeaks past Stone. And I hate to call it that, because I think they sideline her terribly in the third act, where the movie is taken away from her. It was already taken away from her for the most part anyway, but almost like Will said in another category, she does the most with the least, and does it in a big, big space, in a big enough way, and a big enough stage where the kudos that she's been getting is deserved. I think the Academy can't resist making it look like they are whatever you want to call it, diverse, accommodating, woke, whatever dumb word you want to put there. And I hate to think that that's the only reason why Lily Gladstone wins. It shouldn't be, but I think they're going to give it to her and not have it Scorsese shut out.
Yeah.
Will, what do you think?
I agree with you. I think Emma Stone is the best one of the bunch. Lily Gladstone, like I said, did a lot with very little. I don't think it's a great performance, but only because of what she's given. It's the same thing I said about Joaquin Phoenix in Joker. I thought it was a very good one note performance. Because that's all the director gave them to do, was one note. And that's the same thing. She pretty much looks strong and fierce for 40 minutes and then be sick in bed sweating for another three hours. That's all that she was asked to do. She did it wonderfully. Not a great character. Like if someone won an Oscar for that, I'd just be like, oh, okay. I mean, they did a good job, but I think Emma Stone is the one who took the most risk, put herself out there in a lot more ways than I think we'd ever thought we'd see Emma Stone. Mm-hmm. She took the most risk, and I think the most risk should be rewarded. And like I said, I think the fact that she has one might work against her.
I know, because she's so young. Which is
weird, because
it shouldn't matter.
You know, whatever.
So you think Emma Stone wins, or do you think Lily Gladstone's
going to win?
Yeah,
I think Emma should win, but
and you think honestly, Emma? If Lily Gladstone did win, I I'm not mad about that. She's one of the one of the only reasons why I kept watching that film.
Yes. And then that's doing what I should have said earlier. Yeah, she's the best reason to be there.
Like, she actually was who Molly Burkett was. I mean, honestly, that story needed to be told. It's like Tulsa in Oklahoma in 1920. It's like, this is... The only reason why I know about this is because Martin Scorsese made this film. Yes, there's a book, but the fact that I didn't, you know, this isn't out in history books and stuff like that. These are stories that need to be told and, you know, have some justice and tell their story to let people know what happened. But Lily Gladstone did an amazing job. I think everything that she, I don't know, just knowing like everything that happened to her sisters and then the kindness that she ended up giving the people who were killers to them and sleeping next to them and like feeding them when they're just killing her friends and family and trying to kill her. It's like just a horrible, horrible, heartbreaking story. And I think she did that character justice.
Mm-hmm. Right on. All right. Look at us with like, let's see what we got here. 15 minutes to spare to talk about the final category of the night. Best picture.
Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
It's true. Oppenheimer.
The Academy this year maxed out the nominees and put the full 10 on the board. They have American Fiction. They have Anatomy of a Fall. They have Barbie. They have The Holdovers. They have Killers of the Flower Moon. They have Maestro. They have Oppenheimer. They have Past Lives. Thank goodness. They have Poor Things. And they have The Zone of Interest. First things first, if you were to make this a traditional Academy field of five, who are the five last standing?
I mean, do you want me to go with who I think?
Like, yeah, like if you were handicapping like the way they normally do things,
what I would pick. I mean, because here's how I rank them myself personally. So I went I went Past Lives 1, Oppenheimer 2, Anatomy of a Fall 3, Barbie 4, American Fiction 5, Poor Things 6, Zone of Interest 7, Holdovers 8, Maestro 9, Killers of the Flower Moon 10. So I mean, if I was going off of my personal ones, it would be Past Lives, Oppenheimer, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, American Fiction. Now, the thing about that is that I'm not in love with 3 through 5 either. So
it's, right.
I mean, I'm only really love two of those films. So that's, if I was the Oscars though, and knowing how they think, I would say where'd my list go? It would be Killers of the Flower Moon. Maestro. Holdovers, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things and or Barbie, interchangeable.
I gotcha.
If it was five, that's what I think the Oscars would have done.
I think if this was the Oscars, old school Oscars, you keep the public stud, which is Barbie. You keep the front runner, which is Oppenheimer. You throw that comedy a bone of like, what's your best comedy / dramedy, you know, as good as it gets level kind of satire. And I think The Holdovers gets an edge over American Fiction. That's your third. And then if you feel like throwing a foreign nominee in just to, you know, say you do, maybe Anatomy of the Fall gets a nose over The Zone of Interest because The Zone of Interest is going to win another spot. And then that fifth wild card, if it's the Oscars, the big movie tramples, which is Killers of the Flower Moon. If you're throwing an indie darling a bonus, Past Lives. But yeah, it's this is a weird field to shrink to five. Katie, how would you reduce or narrow this if you had to?
Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon. This is not who I would choose, but who I think Oscar would choose.
You're prognosticating here a little. Yeah.
Probably Maestro because it's a
big showy
biopic, Hollywood. Music, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would say.
That's three.
I would say Poor Things and Barbie. Yeah, I would love for them to take out Poor Things and do Past Lives, but I think they would do Poor Things and Barbie.
Yeah, because Poor Things has the nominations in all the other places. That's probably the better New Darling in the Past Lives. Interesting. Well, we all know Oppenheimer is going to win, but what's your should win from this list?
Past Lives.
Yeah. I'm the Barbie guy. I know I'm crazy. That's my number one of the year.
You're but, a Barbie girl.
I know. Barbie world. Yeah. I'd give it to Barbie. I really would. I think it's the maybe that's the plebeian thing to say in terms of like awarding the public, but I think it's the smartest movie of the year. I think it's the best made movie of the year in terms of all the little arts and tech pieces to it. I think it's the best message movie of the year. I just think it speaks to the zillions of things that that matter and people grab onto versus just Oppenheimer. So I'm a Barbie. Yeah, I'd be the Barbie guy in the should win department. We all think though, from a betting standpoint, it's Oppenheimer, right?
Yeah.
Let me get to the odds here. Just will
win is Oppenheimer. I think should win for me is Past Lives. But I mean, Barbie was a phenomenon. Barbie changed. Can't I mean, deny it. It's like one, it did have a huge marketing, worldwide marketing extravaganza right before, conveniently right before the strike happened. When then nothing happened with marketing and all that stuff. But I mean, no one was told they had to get dressed up. No one was told they had to wear pink. No one was, everyone did this like there was an assignment and they already knew. And that's unheard of. Yeah. And I even did videos where it's like, this is what this movie has done. Like every single showing was almost sold out for months. Like that hasn't happened, I feel like, since the 80s. Like that was nuts. And Barbie did that. So if Barbie won, I think that would be amazing. But it's going to go to Oppenheimer.
And it's still a good movie, you know? And it's not like it's the fluffy box office. It's not Despicable Me that we're rewarding here. It's a really good movie written by two brilliant people and all the parts that go with it. From a betting on standpoint, it's Oppenheimer running away and hiding. Poor Things is second. Holdovers is third. Zone of Interest is fourth. Anatomy of Fall is fifth. And then you got the jump to Barbie, American Fiction, Killers of the Flower Moon. Past Lives is ninth. That's hideous. And then Maestro is a long way away at 10th. So
really? Yeah. They have Barbie that far down,
They have Barbie in sixth in betting.
Keep in mind that Barbie phenomenon was
it's the people's
only
choice
part of... was only part of that marketing push. It was called Barbenheimer for a reason. Mm-hmm. And Oppenheimer made almost $1 billion as well. So
it held its own.
It might hit both. It might be the one that deserves it. I'm not saying deserves it. I'm saying by the Oscars deserves it because it's more of a quote unquote film and not IP. Yeah. And also it made money. It did both.
Yeah.
So
then this is my chance to stump is the guy who has been down on Nolan for a long time. Like this, it's a fine film and it checks the Oscar boxes of grand, epic, unfortunately, I'll say the word American. And, it's got, the big ensemble, the showy performances, the disciplined use of effects and sound and all the arts and tech. I get why it's here. I'm still that guy that will call it Nolan's fifth or sixth best film, which to me makes all of this all over the night feel like an absolute makeup award of like, we didn't get you because no one trusts a comic movie. We don't get you because Memento was too soon. We didn't get you because Inception was too Hollywood or pick any of his films that most people call better. Interstellar was a borrowed idea from somebody else. Like whatever Prestige. Rooting one you have for Nolan, Prestige out there, too easy in Hollywood, too polished. He shouldn't have been knocked all the times that he's been knocked that by the time he gets here doing his usual effusive shifting time bullshitty thing where that's his twist. That's his Shyamalan stuff. This is all makeup award stuff. We're giving him one to shut him up. And if this is the one he wins for his grandest, largest one, the one he writes himself for the first time in a long time, I get it. I get why he's going to win. I wish he wouldn't. I wish this was all you spread all the wealth of everything that his film would win to somebody else. I'd love it, but I get it. I get it, but I don't like it, but I get it.
It's weird because it's the only Nolan film I really like.
I know. So, we were talking about this where I'm opposite. Like, I'm an old school knowing guy where all the early stuff is what I like, and the later stuff is just bored me to tears. But, and you're the guy who's coming around. So I get it. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm coming around. I like one of his movies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I don't know. Katie, I mean, what's your grand scope of all this? What's this mean for Nolan? What's this mean for everything else?
I think. I mean, Nolan has, honestly, there's only like one film of Nolan's that I didn't like, and that was Insomnia. Honestly, I hate that movie. But everything else has always been in, like, I think my top 10. Love Tenet. I think Tenet was amazing, even though I didn't understand it, even though I couldn't hear half of it. I still was like, I don't care. This is incredible.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer, I figured, you know, after leaving that, after leaving the theater, it's like, this is going to have multiple Oscar nominations, you know, and it did. I mean, but there's movies that there's Origin, there's All of Us Strangers, there's 1001 that I think should have been nominated here. And I would take out, you know, a few. But Oppenheimer, I think, is going to win. And I'm not mad about that. I mean, you know, it talks about the importance and the also... the importance that people need to understand, like, what nuclear war entails and everything that all of those scientists did to end a war, and then what happened to them after that. It's like, once you really watch the movie and understand what it's about, I think it has an important message that, again, is universal, whether people want to listen to it or not sometimes, but
right.
I mean, it has amazing performances, great direction, and I'm not going to be mad when it wins. I think that's definitely what's going to happen. I would like Barbie to win. I would love Past Lives to win. I wanted that, you know, since April, but again, you know, the Oscars will break your heart. But Oppenheimer, I think, is Christopher Nolan. If he gets the award for this, I think it's deserved.
Okay. Well, look at that. So he stands to win. Is he going to pull the Braveheart, Kevin Costner? Right? I mean, is he, the Dances with Wolves, Braveheart triple here? Is he getting three tonight? So if he's in line to win director, he is a producer on it as a picture winner. And then we're talking screenplay. He's going to walk out with three trophies. He's going to pull the triple, huh?
Wow. Well, I don't think he's going to get the triple, but. I don't think it's going to win screenplay, but...
Adapted screenplay. You guys have American Fiction. I think it's Oppenheimer, right. Didn't I?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be Oppenheimer for adapted screenplay. I would love, though, I want to be wrong in it for be American Fiction.
They don't give that to the rookies that often, though. Or you really got to be a heck of a movie. Interesting. This would be something,
Peele? Give Jordan Peele?
Yeah, but that's a heck of a movie. That was a phenomenon compared to something like American Fiction. So
yeah, I'm just saying
from a zeitgeist level of things. You know what I mean? So
sure.
Interesting. All right. Well, that is the Oscars. How's your confidence level with Jimmy Fallon? How's this going to go?
Jimmy Kimmel?
Sure, that guy's hosting.
Well, he's better than Fallon by a long shot.
That's true. All right. Yeah.
There's going to be. Matt Damon's going to come on, obviously, to make some jokes because they hate each other.
I've recently seen a lot of people, and I really just mean one person, get really upset about like people making jokes at these things. Like, I think if they're done well, they're great. And
it's true. Yeah,
we're going to get some of the best stuff I've ever seen in an award show is Jimmy Kimmel making fun of Matt Damon. That whole thing he did the Oscars a couple years ago where it was like he watched We Bought a Zoo and makes fun of it, and then he has Ben Affleck and Matt Damon come out to present an award and it says Ben Affleck and guest, and then every time Matt Damon tried to do the intro to the award category, he would start playing him off with the symphony, the orchestra. And he's like, you can't play me off. I'm reading the script for the, he's like, come on, hurry up. We want to go home. Like, I love stuff like that. I think when it's done well, I think we notice it when it's done poorly, and that's fine. But like, I think Hollywood does need to be pulled down a peg. I'm the Ricky Gervais school of like, hey, you're sitting here right now. You've got your million-dollar dresses. You got all these free gift bags, free dinner, all this stuff. You're going to a party afterwards. Mm-hmm. You're being recognized by your peers. Everybody loves you. We're literally giving you a show dedicated just to praising you, the top 1% of the world in terms of the economy, and only half of you are as talented enough to earn that, if that. If you make fun of one of your movies, it's just a movie. It's okay.
I know. Lighten up.
Like, yeah. We need to lighten up. I actually like it more when they're more human like that. Like, the fact that Matt Damon is, you know, an Oscar winner, a huge box office guy, really famous person, the fact that he's able to make fun of himself like that makes me happy. The fact that no one cared back, you know, even 10 years ago when Chris Rock went out there and demolished everybody. Like 2005, 2006, no one cared. Jon Stewart did it. No one cared when Whoopi Goldberg would do it, or Billy Crystal did it, or Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin went out there to host once, I think. They went out there and they made fun of everybody. No one cared. It's like everyone's sensitive now. I want to see celebrities get made fun of, because in the end, we're all going to be clapping for them and giving them a nice gold statue, and they're going to go home in their multi-million dollar homes.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Don are going to, make $10 an hour teaching kids all day. So it's like, I'm okay with them being made fun of. So in terms of the host, I'm hoping Jimmy Kimmel isn't like last year where he played it way too safe and goes out there and just wrecks everybody. It's not going to happen, but I want to see some old school scorched earth make fun of it. Like, I miss Chris Rock. When Chris Rock brought all the tourists in from the bus at random into the Oscar ceremony, and everybody went over to Denzel just to shake Denzel's hand, and all these other celebrities were like, what about me? And it's like, no, Denzel. Like, just random crap like that. We're like, just
see, I'm the opposite. Human, you can shave out all those fucking bits and just announce presenters and no host it.
That is not going to happen. So I'm just saying, if I'm going to have to watch for 3.5 hours, I want to see celebrities get made fun of. I will say one more thing though. I saw the most hilarious. You remember a couple years ago when Ellen did the selfie?
Yeah.
And you can still see pictures of it, right?
But
somebody made a meme. Somebody showed this to me the other day, and I laughed so hard. I shouldn't be laughing, but I did. It was that picture, that selfie, Bradley Cooper, Chris Rock, Ellen DeGeneres, George Clooney, Ellen. And it says,
Kevin Spacey,
and it says the last thing they see before they get knocked out on Epstein's Island. And I just, I just laughed so hard. It was like, oh man, it was, it's just great.
Katie, you get the final word, and of course, when you're done, promote yourself, and we'll get us out of here. Look at us, hour one. We're doing great.
I would like the host to entertain us. I mean, we all know that I think Joe Coy did a horrible job at the Golden Globes. But the fact is that even if you have these funny bits that go too long, and it's like, what are they doing? If any of that takes away from someone's acceptance speech, especially those categories where it's like, this is maybe the only time they ever get nominated, in case it's like one of those like short documentary or short animated features and stuff like that, and they're like, they're waved off by the music, then I want the funny bits and all that dumb stuff to go, but just keep it at a good pace. I mean, it's happened before. It can happen again. Just be smart about it. Make people want to watch this. I mean, hell, if they were really smart, they would invite Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, and then they'd get all the viewership.
No! Now we're talking. Do not put that into the universe. I have finally gotten over that. I'm done hating that, but please don't.
Thank you. That would be great.
No, it wouldn't. No.
Maybe the Super Bowl, the most watched thing ever.
They know what they're doing.
I'm over that, but I also didn't think I was over it. Like, I was like, okay, fine. You know what? I'm just going to live with it. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm not a sexist just because I don't like it, even though everyone told me I am, which is stupid. I think, both of you know me personally. I'm far from that.
Agreed.
So I've come to peace with it, but then I've also had 2 weeks away from it, so I don't want to bring it back. just give me some peace, please. I don't think anyone understands out there. that I have to listen to Taylor Swift 24 hours a day because I have two daughters.
Yeah.
I see her everywhere because she's literally got posters and magazines and everything all over my house. I have to hear it in the car, and then I have to see it at football. It has nothing mm-hmm. to do with Taylor Swift. Great person, whatever. I just overexposed. Don't want to see it. So please don't be at the Oscars. Please.
All right, Katie, where can the folks find you on the socials?
Well, they can find me following T Swift on
there it is.
The Blonde in Front on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and my website, The Blonde in Front. But go to Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube because that's not great.
What?
My website isn't.
Okay. I was like, wait a minute, what?
No. My website got hacked, so I'm trying to reorganize it and stuff. So Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Yeah, Katie's awesome, guys. Got to check out her stuff. Please do. Best selfie lady in the game.
Thank you.
Big time.
Definitely.
Great drinking buddy if you have the time to do that.
Yes.
Just a wonderful person to hang out with.
Yeah. And, she orders some mean drive through after a screening too. That lady she puts a night together.
Yep. You know
she's,
it.
She's the best. Plus, I want to end on a positive note so I don't get yelled at by Swifties. All right.
Guys.
Yes. Yes. Is there one other thing you'd like to add?
No, just follow The Blonde in Front.
Oh, right. Indeed. Please do that. All right, folks. We now have merch from shirts to stickers. Find some sweet cinephile hizzy fit swag on TTEPublic.com/user/ruminationsradio network. Follow us on Twitter at cinephilefit, on Facebook at cinephilehizzyfitpodcast, and Instagram at cinephilefits. Find both of us by name on Letterboxd and check out our film reviews and ratings. We are also on Rotten Tomatoes. Thank you so much for your loyal listenership and our tussles and for connecting with us on social media. Cinephile Hissy Fit is a Ruminations Radio Network podcast sponsored by Film Obsessive. If you enjoyed this show, the Ruminations Radio Network has more excellent programming with stellar hosts and spirited topics. Please rate, review, and subscribe to our show and others on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your favorite podcasts.